Part 3. Two Nations.
One of the great surprises to me upon moving north was discovering the extent to which it felt like another country. Partly it was from the look and feel of the north, the high, open moors and big skies, the wandering dry stone walls, the grimy mill towns, the snug stone villages of the dales and lakes. And partly, of course, it was to do with the accents, the different words, the refreshing, if sometimes startling, frankness of speech. Partly it was also to do with the way Southerners and Northerners were so extraordinarily, sometimes defiantly, ignorant of the geography of the other end of the country. It used to astonish me, working on newspapers in London, how often you could call out a question like, "Which of the Yorkshires is Halifax in?" and be met with a table full of blank frowns. And when I moved north and told people that I'd previously lived in Surrey, near Windsor, I often got the same look, a kind of nervous uncertainty, as if they were afraid I was going to say, "Now you show me on the map just where that is." Mostly what differentiated the north from the south, however, was the exceptional sense of economic loss, of greatness past. When you drove through places like Preston or Blackburn, or stood on a hillside like this. If you draw an angled line between Bristol and the Wash, you divide the country into two halves with roughly 27 million people on each side. Between 1980 and 1985, in the southern half, they lost 103,600 jobs. In the northern half, in the same period, they lost 1,032,000 jobs, almost exactly 10 times as many. And still, the factories are shutting. Turn on the local television news any evening, and at least half of it will be devoted to factory closures. And the other half will be about a cat stuck up a tree somewhere. There is truly nothing direr than local television news. So I ask again, what do all those people in all those houses do? And what, more to the point, will their children do?